in Revelation 13. We approach it from the standpoint of Isaiah 1:18, and we look to the Lord for his guidance and also for your kind cooperation in the consideration of the message that the Revelator has for us in Revelation, the 13th chapter. I'm sure that in your review of Revelation 13, you probably had come to the conclusion that this is a preview of what ignorance, ambition, and affluence can do to the professed people of God. In considering both Revelation 13 and 16, it is necessary for us to understand certain symbols. These symbols will be valuable to us not only in this study, but also in Brother Rod's study on Sunday. And so we'll begin by a consideration of the first verse of Revelation, the 13th chapter. And we'll ask Sister Kramer, would you read the first two verses for us, please?
And I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, seven heads and ten horns, and upon his horns ten crowns, and upon his head the name of blasphemy. And the beast which I saw was unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion, and the dragon gave him his power and his seat and great authority.
Thank you. Possibly we should first consider the definition of a beast. Who would like to tell us what a beast in the concept of our, within the concept of our study, really represents? Someone said something back there? All right, a government, Brother Hap Sharp says. Brother Lyle Cook.
I believe the pastor says it's a purely civil power.
All right, a beast is a civil power. However, what else is there about a civil power that completely makes it a beast within the context of our study, Brother Rock?
I think the idea is it has to be an ecclesiastical government of some sort. And Brother Russell, in the earlier, there's an early Tower article, the number of which I'm sorry I can't recall, but perhaps some of the others can, where he emphasizes, here it is, it's about page 510, Watchtower 510, where he emphasizes that it has to be an ecclesiastical government. Now that means where the church is an integrated part of the government, and he draws the contrast between other governments around which did not have that case and the beast. For example, the United States never was, is not, and is unlikely ever to be or ever could be a beast in the scriptural sense.
And that is a key, a wonderful key to both studies. We ask the question, why did the beast rise out of the sea, and when was this? We're not asking for an exact day and date. Why was it that the beast rose out of the sea? What does this mean to us? Who would like to volunteer? Brother Weber.
This beast is the world of mankind. That's what Antichrist is in the world of mankind. So this beast here represents the world of mankind. The sea is the world of mankind.
Right. The beast is as described by Brother Rod. And just about the approximate time that we're speaking of is when? What is the approximate time period we're speaking of? Brother Harry has a thought back there.
I would say from the 312 to 539 period of time.
All right. We've given you latitude there. And we don't want to be any more specific than that unless somebody wishes to be. Brother Lyle. It's helpful. It's helpful. It begins as a civil power, but something is added to it, and I think we understand it that way. Thank you, Brother Lyle. Now, the beast had seven heads. It had 10 horns and 10 crowns. What did the seven heads represent? Who would like to give us that clue? What did the seven heads represent? Brother Weber.
Said the seven heads are seven successive distinct forms of government.
And the thought that it is seven gives us an additional thought that what kind of a rule is this? If the thought of seven is rather complete, then what kind of a rule would this really represent?
Long continued,
or starts with a letter U, universal. Yes, okay, I think that helps us. Now then, it also had 10 horns, and perhaps you'd like to comment on the 10 horns, Brother Lyle.
Well, what were just the 10 going horns? On the symbol of horn, I really haven't had a chance to study for this, so I ought to keep quiet. Mm-hmm. But a horn normally is considered a power. Or a government symbol of power.
Very good. And so 10 horns would be what? Anyone?
10
powers, or 10 divisions of power. Now we're putting all of this together. And then there were 10 crowns, but peculiarly, where were these 10 crowns? Okay, sister has her hand up there, Brother Keith.
These were the 10 ruling houses in Europe, the monarchs, the kings and czars, and all together, 10 houses of Israel, of reigning power in Europe.
All right, you know, notice that these horns were not on the heads. They were upon the horns. These crowns were upon the horns. And what does that mean to us? The fact that these crowns were upon the horns and not on the heads. Brother Harry.
Well, it would mean that the 10 powers associated with the beast, which had the seven successive ruling heads, would be recognized as kings. We know from history that this beast represented the papal control, and they subdivided the kingdom up amongst other kings and put them, or permitted them, in this position.
Yes. This is a neat picture of the papacy ruling through other powers to which it was joined. Now we're beginning to see how this is coming together. What were the names of blasphemy upon the heads? Notice that it was the names of blasphemy were upon the heads. What could that possibly mean, Brother Rod?
Well, it shows that these seven forms of government which were upon this last beast, fourth beast, remember this is a parallel of the four beasts of Daniel 7, which also had the 10 horns and so on. So we want to see that it parallels that. And we'll see some other parallels too, I'm sure, in a moment. But it represented the seven forms of government which were upon that system. And it represented the papal system all down through those years, and they did have the names of blasphemy upon those heads because they claimed to rule by divine right, which is given to them by the Pope. They claimed that he was the vicegerent of Christ and so on. And this would certainly parallel also the count in Revelation 17, which shows the woman sitting on the sea, and she has the name of blasphemy also.
Yes, that is quite concise. And we're going to get into the thought of blasphemy a little further on. We'll just move on to the characteristics of the leopard, the bear, and the lion. Would someone like to take the leopard and indicate to us what the signification there is. Who would like to take the leopard? Please feel free to enter into this study. In Revelation 13, there is something for everyone. Don't feel that you have to be a precise student of Revelation to be able to participate here. You don't have to be. This is a practical lesson that is given to us here in this 13th chapter. Now, who would like to take the leopard as to its characteristics and what it represents as concerns our study? Brother Hepp.
I think you'll find that the leopard represented Babylon as the first universal empire, and this whole beast here seems to be a conglomerate of all of these civilizations which preceded it. And of course it's built there, it's united in Rome, actually. It brought all of these previous cultures down here to Rome. And Rome, of course, was the seat of the beast, and is also the seat of the papal power.
We'd like to correct you in love, Brother Happ. The leopard really concerned itself with Greece, the third beast. But we were interested in as to what the characteristics of a leopard are that tie into our study. Brother Lyle Cook.
Well, a leopard has a coloring that is camouflaged, that allows it to be camouflaged in the forest. Various spots. I think that represents that papacy would use various procedures in harmony with the locality in which that portion of papacy was located. In other words, they were not consistent in their dealings, but were able to accommodate themselves in harmony with the prejudices and so forth of the local areas, is my understanding of what the leopard spots meant,
yes.
Particularly the spots. It is not a uniform color.
Thank you. Brother Harry has a thought.
One of the characteristics in the animal kingdom is that the animals are colorblind. And the leopard, with its spots being black and white, can step into a bunch of bushes, and another animal passing by would never see that leopard because of the fact it can't see color and can only see black and white. And they would blend in it would blend in so much that it would be impossible for them to see it almost. And so consequently, the only reason we see this leopard is for the simple fact that we are not colorblind. The Lord has opened our eyes and anointed him with eye salve, and so consequently we can see, and it stands out to us, even if it is hiding in the bushes, so to speak.
Yes, and you've seen the camouflage that they use in the military uniforms, so that you become and blend into the scenery. This is something similar, but we're not ignorant of Satan's devices, and we are aware that these characteristics of the leper, which are the vigilant, secretive, active, and changeable, all paint a certain picture to us of this particular beast. Now, let's get on to the bear. What is there about the bear that ties in with our study? Sister Pascal, please.
Well, the bear feet are slowly, cautiously moving upon its prey, and it also uses its big paws to crush its prey.
Anyone else? It can hug you or stomp you, one or the other, and this is also very pictorial of the activities of this beast that we're going to learn more about. Now, perhaps then we can go to the lion, so much for the bear. We're not going to spend too much time on this. What is there about the lion that is characteristically indicative of this particular beast? Brother Roy, please. And then Brother Weber. Brother Roy Pascal.
Well, to me, the lion represents as a head or a king, and this is certainly what papacy has really done, is set himself up as a king and a ruler.
Mm-hmm. And what is there about the lion's mouth?
A lion has a big roar. He's a king of the animal kingdom, so to speak. When he roars, they all listen. So this is his characteristic.
Also, what about the jaws of a lion? Sister Pascal has a thought.
Has very strong jaws in
very
it.
Strong
and it breaks
jaws.
Its food into pieces for its prey.
Beloved, you think that you know that the muscle in here is called the masseter muscle, and you realize that it's very strong. You think your masseter muscle is strong. That lion's is probably 10 times stronger. You had a thought, Brother Rod?
I just wanted to emphasize that what we want to be certain to do is to keep in mind that this is a parallel study with Daniel 7, and that tells us and ties this in very, very tightly, because you may recall that the four beasts there, the three previous beasts, which represented Babylon, Medo-Persia, and Greece, are illustrated by a lion, a bear, and a leopard. So it's very clear that we're tying these two together. Mm-hmm. And also about the lion, of course, stupefies its victim with its great roar, which, of course, is quite unnecessary. The sound can't really hurt you. But yet, we read also in Daniel 7 about how the papacy, there was a horn with a mouth, and it spoke great swelling words. So we can begin to tie all of these little loose ends together and see how all of these stories are tied together. And bear in mind that here in Revelation, which is a revealment of, or an explanation of, we should expect to see additional explanation of Daniel 7. And sure enough, the Lord is telling us that papacy took on the characteristics of all of these other previous empires which were overcome one after another. And so elsewhere then, when we see that the system is hit on the feet and it all falls together, the whole image falls together, it's a natural thing. All of the parts are included in the final one.
Yes, thank you. Please feel free to bring out additional scriptures. Our references here are by no means comprehensive, and the thought of the lion here, that it has a mouth that could devour and yet speak great things, is quite a good application to this beast that is coming out of the sea. Now, this is the fourth beast of Daniel 7. But the first beast, or the ten-horned beast of Revelation chapter 13. Is there anything that anyone would like to add to our thoughts? We'd like to have an objective during the first hour, and that is to cover 10 verses. So we're going to have to move along. Now, one thought. What is meant by the dragon giving the beast its power? In the latter part of our second verse. Who was the dragon, Brother Rod?
Well, the dragon pictures the civil power, and we see how the civil power gives their authority to the beast. In other words, papacy ruled through its great swelling words. It says, I have the divine authority to authorize these kings. Well, in actuality, of course, the papacy would have had no power except that which was granted to them by the kings. And later we see how when the kings took back their power, the papacy was left stripped and naked. She had no power of her own. And elsewhere in Revelation, it suggests that. Both in Revelation 17, verse 13, these have one mind and shall give their power and strength unto the beast, referring again to the ten kings. Also, similar things in Daniel 7 and elsewhere. So we see this repeated over and over. They had power only because of the kings who would ultimately turn upon her and devour her and consume her.
Thank you. Brother Harry has a thought. And Brother Harry, perhaps you could tell us when this power was transferred.
Well, I had references to the 12th chapter of Revelation, where the red dragon and the man-child, which is papacy, fought. And eventually the man-child was prevailed, and there was no place found in heaven for the dragon anymore. And I associate that with Justinian, was it, who gave the Pope in this, and I think it was in around 5 something, this power. So to me, the beast gave the the dragon, which is the dragon that Daniel saw, which is called a dragon, which brings us down into pagan Rome, transferred the power to papal Rome in around the 539. And that's how I see this power given unto the beast.
Thank you. And that came about because Justinian was interested in his particular domain in Constantinople, you know, that was founded by Constantine. And so he said to the bishop at Rome, here, you take over the Western Empire. And that just put the whole thing right into the lap of the Pope at that time. So the dragon, the civil power, did transfer its seat of authority to this particular beast. Now let us continue with verses 3 and 4. Sister Burns, would you read those for us, please?
And I saw one of his heads, as it were, wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast, and they worshipped the dragon, which gave power unto the beast, and they worshipped the beast, saying, who is like unto the beast, and who is able to make war with him? Is that it?
Thank you. And by what circumstances was it that one of the heads was wounded and then healed? This is an important consideration for us as Bible students. What does this all mean? That the sister has a thought back there, Brother Craig. One of the heads was wounded and then healed.
That one head was the Catholic Church and the religious movement, the Reformation, blow a strong wound into the whole system. And it was healed after this when the movement joined again with the power of civil powers. Then the wound was healed again.
Thank you. So, sister indicates that the wound was caused by the Reformation, but the healing portion of it takes a little more discussion. Who would like to enter into that for us? What really created the caused the healing in this arrangement? Brother Larry?
Well, after certain truths were presented, they joined back in to make new unions with church and state. So how could they condemn papacy, you know, if they were doing the same thing?
So then the reformers really did what after a time? The Reformation started out good, but what happened, Brother Rod?
They stopped reforming. They stopped protesting, and that's been the whole trouble ever since.
There's the clue. They stopped their protesting, and what similar thing did they do that papacy did? The reformers. What did they join with?
Civil powers,
and that was their undoing, was it not? Are there thoughts along the lines of this question, Brother Lyle?
Well, was not that the they were succumbed to flatteries. There's a scripture that tells us that they were succumbed, or they were overcome by flatteries.
Yes.
And we believe that these civil powers said, well, we believe you're right, and we'd like to have you be head of our religious system in this country. That was the thing that brought their downfall. Then they made a new union of church and state, a new fornication, as it were.
Yes, that was Daniel 11 and 32. I wish we could consider these, but our time is going to be short if we'd like to get a rounded-out discussion of all of the verses. So then why was it that the world wondered after the beast? Why did it wonder after the beast? And what do you think this thought of wonder means? Who would like to explain that for us? What was there about the healing process after the Reformation that would cause the world to wonder? What was there about the peoples and their more or less obedience? And Brother Harry, maybe you could expand that thought.
Well,
with highly symbolic language here, and so the world was amazed, you might say, at the time of the Reformation. Those individuals in those countries thought surely this would be the downfall of this great Antichrist system because of the fact of the Reformation. And they were amazed then that the Protestants did the very same thing and put them right back in this same position. So they thought, well, maybe this is the way it's supposed to be. And so consequently they said, who could make war with the beast? Because if no matter what happens, it goes right back to the same thing as the way it was before.
Yes,
so it's a symbolic way of expressing their amazement or confusion or what have you concerning it.
People had become accustomed to obedience and honor, giving obedience and honor to this higher authority. And consequently, all of those, except those that were enlightened by God's word, were no doubt amazed and began to wonder in uncertainty regarding such strange happenings. Something the Reformation couldn't accomplish against this great entity, what it had set out to do, and they thought, well, maybe it's just a little more powerful than we thought. That is apparently the thought of the one world wondering after the beast. And how did the world then worship both the dragon and the beast? What is the proper thought there? Brother Levi, do you know what the worship there really means? Did they really worship it as we worship God?
Well, I presume that, of course, you get the state of affairs where they become more favorably inclined to accept the idea of unionism between church and state, and they do not. Protestantism, of course, has lost its protesting element. So the world is accepting this idea of church and working into politics, and which is the beast's strategy. And since the civil powers and the religious powers seem to get along so well, they are willing to go along with this possibility that nothing too wrong about the idea of their cooperation.
All right. Anyone else a thought on the Brother Rod? There is now two entities that enter into this picture, Brother Rod.
Yes, they worship both the dragon and the beast here. Now, the reason for that is the divine right of kings. Now, not only was the papacy there, pictured largely by the beast or the government, but also the kings. And they literally felt that they could worship God through these two entities. They would fall upon their knees, just like they would worship God, in fealty towards the king, who was really God's representative, and likewise the papacy. So they believed their government was there by God-given decree, and that no one could achieve any standing before God except through fealty to both the king and country.
At previous time, they would give reverence to the papal powers, would they not? But then, under this arrangement where they worship both the dragon and the beast, it wasn't that they worshiped the dragon. They gave honor to the dragon, the civil power, but they then continued to also give honor and reverence to the Roman Catholic Church because of her remarkable recovery from the Reformation. And it was then really that the beast system even more thoroughly deceived men. Any thoughts along the lines of verses 3 and 4 that anyone would like to give? Sister Pascal?
I was just comparing it with verse 18 in chapter 18 of Revelation, where they later on, when they saw the smoke, you know, of our burning,
yes.
They said, what city is likened to this great city, you know? That's the way they compared it. It was the greatest to them.
Yes. Well, this was at the height of its grandeur. We might agree with that. Mm-hmm. Brother Rod?
Just one more small point here, just so that we can get some feeling for the
for the extraordinary nature of the events we're considering here. We think of the Great War in World War I and II as an amazing thing, and here we're talking about a war on a large scale which lasted for up to 7 years in the case of World War II, at least in parts of Europe. And yet during the Reformation, these two warring factors, Protestantism and Catholicism, this great wound which was ultimately healed, those wars lasted 100 years. A war that lasted 100 years before the Peace of Westphalia. And this is the reason why it was so extensive and why people were so amazed that after that time, nothing would change, and it's all healed up and they're right back where they were. It's truly an astounding historical thing.
And to anyone that would give it a thought at that time, it was overwhelming, no doubt. Any additional thoughts on verses 3 and 4? We'll continue in verses 5 and 6, and we'll ask Sister McAllister to read those for us, please.
And there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and power was given unto him to continue 42 months. And he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God, to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle, and them that dwell in heaven.
Thank you. Now, here is a paradox that we have. How is it that the mouth could speak great things and yet blaspheme against God and his true church? Kind of an odd situation, isn't it? How could this be? What were these great things and what were these blasphemies? Brother Happ?
It was self-exaltation on the part of the Antichrist during the 1260 years of his reign when Elijah was in the wilderness. The church was in the wilderness, of course, among the people.
All right.
And it was a condition existed there, which of course was a revival of the old Roman Empire, which had fallen. Pagan Rome actually revived with a new head, which was the papacy. So it was symbolized later there as the beast having two horns like a lamb and spake as a dragon. The dragon is the voice of Satan. 20th chapter of Revelation says the dragon is that old Satan, the Satan and the devil. Of course, pagan, the civil powers were representative of Satan in this particular category.
It
was the mouthpiece of Satan, that's what I should say.
Yes, we'll reserve our thoughts on the two-horned beast until after verse 11. Yes. But what is there about the mouth that could speak great things on the one side and yet blaspheme God's true saints on the other? Brother Harry, and then Brother Roy.
Great things would be great worldly wisdom, which they spoke, and which blasphemed God. The word blaspheme means anything that brings dishonor or disloyalty, and the doctrines which they set forth and advocated brought dishonor to God, and yet in the eyes of the world they were great and swelling things, and they seemed to make them stick.
And Brother Roy and then Sister Sharon. And really, what do we mean by blasphemy? Let us keep that in mind.
Well, you take the Pope, and he said great things. He claimed to have such power as the keys of hell. He could deliver curses if he so chose, if you didn't honor him. He claimed to be the vicegerent of God himself. And he more or less wanted to rule the whole world and have people honor him and the place of God.
Sister Sharon.
I'd like to use a parallel scripture, Daniel 7:25. And he shall speak great words against the Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and think to change times and laws, and they shall be given into his hand until a time and times and the dividing of times. And this is how they spoke great blasphemes against the great God of heaven.
Yes, thank you. And there is a wonderful parallelism between Revelation 13 and Daniel 7. When I call upon Brother Sharp, his first name is Brother Happ, H-A-P. I'm not calling him Brother Hack, H-A-C-K. It's Brother Hap Sharp, for those that may not know him. I'll say Brother Sharp from now on. Sister Pascal, please, and then Brother Lyle.
The biggest blasphemy, I think, was when the Pope set himself up and convinced the people that Christ or kingdom was coming through him and blessing the world. That he was the direct representative of this, or was ruling power of this, and convinced the people of this, that this was actually the promised kingdom or Christ's kingdom.
Yes. Misrepresented God in that respect, something terrible, didn't he? Now, Brother Lyle?
Well, I was just going to say that one of the definitions of blasphemy is a misstatement of character. It isn't swearing, or as we know, but it's a misstatement of character. And in on the second volume, page 305, the third statement, he covers this.
Yes, thank you. So it misrepresented God's character by calling itself the kingdom of the living God and attributed to itself that which really belonged to God, and of course it persecuted God's people. Brother Levi, a thought?
Well, I think while you're on the theme of blasphemy, which is the reason for its ultimate judgment, because the one whom it is blaspheming is the one who is now present and who is now going to consume it by the spirit of his mouth and the breath of his lips, for this as a form of judgment, which of course this is a mouth-to-mouth you might say dissolution rather than a resuscitation, because this mouth that speaks great things and that does this blasphemy, it's broken down into interesting features here. The blasphemy in verse 5, it says, and there was given to a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and verse 6, and he opened his mouth to blaspheme against God, to blaspheme his name, and his tabernacle. That's interesting. And them that dwell in heaven. And if you refer to Thessalonians, which is the up-to-date reason for present judgment, it says, Paul is telling the church that this one that has to be revealed and destroyed is one who opposes, and this is 2 Thessalonians 2:4, is the one who opposeth and exalteth himself above all that is called God. That's quite an order there to fit into. Or that is worshipped, so that he, as God, sitteth in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. And that's it. That's the ultimate of blasphemy. And therefore it says that then that wicked one, which he is now identified as Satan, which is now, of course, in the ultimate judgment, she shall be revealed, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming. So that blasphemy is what's going to elicit for him his ultimate judgment.
Thank you. Now we'll have to ask the question, what do the 42 months represent? I don't think that we need spend too much time on that. What did the 42 months represent? Who would like to? Brother Roy, we'll give you that privilege.
Representing 1,260 years of power from A.D. 539 to 1799.
Briefly, how do we get that, Brother Roy?
Oh, I understand well enough for myself, but not enough to explain.
How many days? All right, we'll ask Brother Marzuski, Brother Don Marzuski, to give us that.
We've got the 42 times 30 days in each month, so 42 times 30 gives us the 1,260 days.
And is there any additional corroboration? Is this the only place where we get the 42 months or 1,260 days? Where else? Brother Rod?
It appears so often, this scripture is so important,
since it marks the termination of the papal power to persecute, that it appears in the scriptures as in number form at least 11 times, and of which we've observed one here, and we'll see several others. But also it's repeated here in Daniel, the Daniel 7:25, which was read about, again, the 3.5 times there, 3.5 times, each time 360 days, again comes out 1260. And the point is, in verse 26, the judgment shall sit, and they shall take away his dominion to consume and to destroy it unto the end. So we see the beginning of the consumption and destruction of that system from that point on, of its dominion, of its dominion. So we would emphasize that.
And thank you. We'll also refer you to Volume 2, page 91, Volume 3, pages 50 and 64, and Volume 3, pages 39. This will all corroborate the sketchy outline that we have given you on the 1260 days, but the wonderfully placed there in Scripture for our edification. Verses 7 and 8. Sister Tafe, would you read that for us, please?
And it was given unto him to make war with the saints and to overcome them, and power was given him over all kindreds and tongues and nations. And all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him, whose names are not written in the book of life of the Lamb, slain from the foundation of the world.
Thank you. Then how was the great power, how has the great power, I should say, been used against God's people? How has it been used against entire nations and really all languages? How do we explain that?
His power is persecuting power.
Brother Ed? Yes?
It had the authority to put to death those that did not hear the decrees of the church. A full persecuting power.
And was there anything deceptive about it, too? Would you say, Brother Ed?
Well, first of all, it was completely opposite to the spirit of the Lord, the spirit of the truth. It was a spirit of power and dominion and force and pressure, not one of love and that which is, we find, the harmony of the divine plan and its purposes as we understand it.
And this persecution, opposition, when did it almost accomplish its objective, according to another text of Scripture in Revelation in a particular church period that we may have in mind? What church period, during what church period was this almost accomplished? Sister?
The 1,000 years of the dominion of the Catholic Church above the European countries, the Dark Ages.
Really, within the Dark Ages, what church period was the all of this opposition almost effective to snuff out all of all those that were faithful to God? During what church period? Perhaps then we could read Revelation, the third chapter and the first verse. Sister Pam, would you read that for us and explain what it means, really?
And unto the angel of the church in Sardis write, these things saith he that hath the seven spirits of God and the seven stars. I know thy works, that thou hast a name, that thou livest and art dead.
What does that latter phrase mean to us?
The church had nearly died under the persecuting powers of papacy. The true church had nearly died.
Yes, thank you. And anyone that stood in the way of the objectives of this beast system during this period of time had felt the brunt of its opposition, did it not? It had this great power that it really used for 1,260 years. Against God's people, against entire nations, and all of the languages in the civilized world. And what is the real meaning of the thought, those who dwell upon the earth, and why are their names not written in the book of the life of the Lamb, or in the Lamb's book of life? Who are these that dwell upon the earth? Brother Larry, behind you there, Brother Craig.
Those that are obedient to the ruling system, which would be papacy, the ecclesiastical system. And I mean, what was the other part of the question?
Well, and why is it that their names would not be written in the Lamb's Book of Life?
Well, instead, you know, they're really written in the Book of Papacy, you know, because they're following his kingdom and not the true kingdom.
And whose names will be written in the Lamb's Book of Life? Surely we know that. Whose names will be written in the Lamb's Book of Life? Sister Ellie?
144,000.
The 144,000, those faithful ones that follow the Lamb whithersoever he goeth. 14th chapter of Revelation. Now, let's have another thought, if we may, on this expression, those that dwell upon the earth. Brother Rod.
I think the idea here is not that all those who dwell on planet Earth, because that would include even the saints. But that wasn't the thought. Here again, Earth pictures the established religious order of things, as opposed to the C class, which represented the irreligious world. And so we saw how the system rose up out of the C, the irreligious world, and now you have the men on Earth, the established solid ground, the established religious order. And that'll be important in the following verses concerning the two-horned beast.
Yes, and it'll be important in your study of Revelation 16. I think we realize that. We will move along to verses 9 and 10. Sister Keaton, would you read 9 and 10 for us, please? And while Sister Keaton reads this, we're going to ask the question, what do these verses convey to your mind? I have no specific questions on these, but they are very vital and very full of meaning to us. Sister Keaton.
If any man have an ear, let him hear. He that leadeth into captivity shall go into captivity. He that killeth with the sword must be killed with the sword. Here is the patience and the faith of the saints.
Thank you. Who would like to express their opinion of, or their thought of, what verse 9 means to them? What does verse 9 mean to you, Sister Ann?
Blessed are your eyes that they see, and your ears that they hear and understand the blessed word.
All right, thank you. Anyone else? Is this a warning to the Lord's people of any kind? Sister Ellie?
I think along those lines, too, that it's important for us to understand what we have studied so far in this particular chapter to be able to recognize the Antichrist.
Thank you. Was there a hand back there? Brother Roy? Or Brother Weber? Or Brother Roy?
He that have an ear, let him hear. One of the first things I learned when I came into the truth, that you cannot understand this unless you have the hearing ear or the seeing eyes. And this puts a greater responsibility on one once he does understand this.
Thank you. We do feel that this... Was there another hand there? Brother Levi, a brief comment on this, please.
Well, I didn't have my hand up, but I was working on a thought that that's a tremendous statement. He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith to the churches, because it goes with the other one that says, blessed are they that readeth, and they that understand the words of this book. So there's a high premium put upon Revelation, and many of the brethren, of course, would be interested to know about that. But the premium is not upon the speculatory aspects of dissertations on revelation, but upon the disposition of being attuned to what the mind of the Spirit may have at any given time, because this is time progressive book. There are seven stages of the church, and there are certain messages that the church would be able to understand at one time that might not have been accessible at an earlier time. Now, of course, in the Laodicean period, we have the full weight of this exhortation, let him that hath an ear hear, because there would be more unraveling, because that's what it means, revelation. We are in this revelation period. This is epiphania, a manifestation. So there's evidently a special premium on the study of revelation according to the spirit of the, according to the mind of the Spirit, running in consonance with our own spirit as a desire to hear what the Lord may be saying message-wise to the church at this time.
Thank you. We do feel it is a special warning to those of the Lord's people not to let their spiritual senses become dull. Now, Brother Ed, could you take up verse 10 for us briefly? Because we must end.
Yes. Your thought would be in your question, what value is this to us?
Yes.
Basically, just studying history of the past is very interesting, but unless it has an important part in our personal lives today, it's of very little value. We've seen since the death of the pastor an indication that that same policy that was followed in the past when they bowed to organizations, bowed to priests, and bowed to civil powers in order to have their worship, nevertheless, into the Bible student movement, such a fallacy has again risen from time to time, whereby one would be swayed with the thought of a society or organization and bowed to that and found that they had no religious freedom unless they were to follow the dictates of that organization. That's leading one into captivity.
Yes, thank you. Sister Sharon, yes.
I am thinking also about the beautiful picture that we have of David and Goliath. When Goliath came against Israel and against David, against our Lord, he had a sword, his full armor, and Goliath was killed by his very own sword. It is the doctrines of the old order that will destroy the Catholicism and that old order. And we have lived to see this.
Thank you. Brother Lyle, you have a thought?
Well, I'm not sure it's in line, but it seems to me it reminds me of the thought, he that lives by the sword shall die by the sword. If we use the truth to destroy our brethren, dear friends, it will kill us. The Lord's not going to accept those who do not develop love as a result of having the truth, and who are willing to use it to destroy their brethren. That's enough.
Yes. There was also a thought that those that took up the sword of the Spirit to defend their liberty of thought and conscience oftentimes were put to death by the sword of this great system. Isn't it true? And so these two verses are to us a wonderful warning that if we let our spiritual senses get dull, we'll be carried away. If we permit ourselves to be led into captivity, we may lose our spiritual life. Brother Harry.
Brethren, we're going to break now.
Verses concerned itself with the ten-horned beast that rose up out of the sea, the irreligious masses of the peoples. And now we have introduced in the 11th verse another beast. And this is the two-horned beast. We'll then proceed with our lesson, and we'll ask Sister Jean Coppersmith there, back there, to read for us the 11th and the 12th verses.